In the hour or two you set aside each day to ponder deep questions about the English language, do you ever find yourself wondering why can we be inept but not ept? Why unkempt but not kempt? Well, you've stumbled on what language experts call unmatched pairs.
And it's true. I have been spending a couple hours a day pondering this every day. So we've got one of our favorite language experts with us today to help sort all of that out. Grant Barrett is a journalist, a lexicographer, and co-host of the public radio show Away With Words. Grant, welcome back.
Hello there.
Well, I want to start. You very thoughtfully, I have to say, for the purposes of this discussion, provided me with a short poem. I'm not going to read all of it, but it sort of outlines what we're talking about here with these unmatched words. And the poem, the first verse of it, is called A Very Descript Man. And give credit where credit is due. It was written by J.H. Parker, first printed in Collier's Magazine back in the 1940s. So here's the first verse. I am such a dolent man. I eptly work each day. My acts are all basilic. I've just ain't things to say. And so that sort of outlines what these words are like. It also demonstrates that this is an issue, if you can call it that, that's been around for quite some time.
Yeah, it's interesting. We have this kind of innate sense on the value of words. It has something to do with things that aren't about their meaning or their definition. So we call this pragmatics in linguistics, where we have little flags attached to words. And with these particular words, we have a flag that says, I don't know the antonym. So big, we know the antonym is little is a good one for that, and happy and sad and fat and skinny and so forth. But if you say somebody is indolent, you're like struggling for its opposite number. What is its, who is its partner in language? You know, we're missing that. And you can start to slowly build this list over time and say, wait a second, I don't know what the opposite incognito is. Is it cognito? If I travel everywhere with my name on a badge, am I traveling cognito? I don't really know.
If you're kempt, unkempt, where did kempt go? Inept, are you apt?
Yeah.
And all of those sorts of things. So I've heard this term lost positives. Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah, that's the same thing, exactly. Or unmatched pairs, lost positives. And it all depends upon this very interesting thing about words. Each of them travels alone. They might be a part of a caravan, if we want to take this metaphor pretty far, but for the most part, their history is dependent upon accidents. So if you do have a pair of words like kempt or unkempt, unkempt has traveled well and has lasted and has been used, but kempt somehow doesn't exist anymore. Or if it does exist, it exists in a different form. Unkempt is super interesting because it's related to the word combed, as in I combed my hair. And what we have here then is this where the C traded for a K, where the T used for the past participle is actually an ED in the other word, the unvoiced P versus the voiced B, and there you have it. It kempt and combed are actually the same word etymologically. They both mean combed. But we just got the form kempt attached to unkempt and kept it. So it's this preserved archaism. It's a mosquito in amber, as it were.
So is there any move ever afoot to resurrect some of these words? Like, let's use kempt for a good example, as long as we're talking about that. Or is it once they're gone, they're never coming back?
Well, there are a lot of people like you and me and our listeners who do love to resuscitate these words, usually with a little bit of a joke in mind or irony, humor. They show up in book titles, humorous essays, doggerel, bits of jokes and poems. So mainly they're kept alive by artificial resuscitation. They're put in life support, usually with humor attached.
So do you suppose in this age of, you know, YouTube and the internet, that there's more of a possibility now that one of these might catch some sort of viral fire and come alive for at least a little while?
Yeah, that's a really good question. There's a downside to that. It's probably true that they're more likely to catch fire at all because of the modern age and how fast things spread. But at the same time, they're also just as likely to burn out, and burn out super fast. So it's a problem. You can the last month's fad is completely forgotten, and it's the same with language. We use these things. We enjoy them for a while. They're funny for a while, and then they wear themselves out really quickly.
So speaking of fads, why is it that one form of a word sticks around forever and ever and ever, and then the other form does disappear? It falls off the map, and eventually we can't even remember what it was.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you remember where you learned most of the words that you know?
School, maybe?
Yeah, there we go. So that's the question. Is most of the time, one of the things we don't have attached to most of the words that we know is where we first learned them. For when a word is put into our own lexicon, into our personal vocabulary, our idiolect, it belongs to us, and it's modified every time we use it, every time it's added to a particular person's lexicon. And in this way, they change over time. Now, some of us, let's say the great writers of the day, or the great playwrights, or the great orators, or those, or even just a professor at a university who has 500 kids a semester, right? These are people who have influence. And so their particular use of a word is more likely to be spread and is more likely to continue. And so through accidents of history, their particular idiolects become a little more standard, and they're able to spread their particular oddities. So if you have a favorite word, you ever realize that you've been using a word too much?
Oh, yes. And,
somehow it keeps coming out of your mouth. Mm-hmm. Well, now imagine that you do that every day and lots of people are listening. In that way, you can affect language change.
Well, I'm working on that on the radio right now by using unusual words every single day and seeing who listens. But, you know, we've been spending an inordinate amount of time on unkempt. What other favorites do you have?
Well, a lot of people like to ask disheveled. You know, she had disheveled hair when mm-hmm. she rose in the morning. Disheveled is really interesting. We do tend to associate it with hair, which is amazing because the disheveled part of it comes from the French word cheveux for hair. In French, they have a very similar word. It's not déchevelé. It's E-C-H-E-V-E-L-E. So they use a different negative in the front of the root, which means hair, to indicate that the hair is in disarray or out of order. But we did get it from the French, and we inherited only that form of the word from the French. You don't wake up or you don't go to the salon and walk out with disheveled hair after having your hair done, right? So a lot of the words that we have where we don't have the pairs is because we got them from French or German or another language, and we only borrowed one half of the pair. It's kind of like adopting only one twin or only one triplet in some cases and leaving the other one for another family to take into their home.
Any very American versions of this?
I'm sorry?
Like a really American version of an unmatched word.
Oh, most of these are old. Most of these predate even the founding of the United States as a country. I don't have a particularly American one. No, I don't. There's a ton to discuss, though. I think the Americans, like the Australians, have a particular knack for playing with these archaic forms, and we like to speak in a really low slang and then throw in these fancy words once in a while just to kind of raise an eyebrow at people and say, see, I'm not only about slang, it's the highfalutin talk.
So we've only got about 30 seconds left. Are there any words in it that we use now that you could see in a century or two might wind up in this category?
Oh, no, that's too much. I do want to say that one of my favorite words to talk about with unmatched pairs is ruthless, because ruthy would be a word that would mean pity, or it would mean consideration for a person's negative situation. So when you talk about the ruthless, you mean lacking in pity. And I have found that people have trying to use ruthless in a non-ironic way, throwing it into the writing. She had great roots, and she cared for the children like they were her own. That's really interesting. So we may see that Ruth comes back as a new matched pair.
All right. Well, Grant, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Grant Barrett, our go-to guy for all things linguistic, also a journalist, co-host of the public radio show Away With Words.